Welcome to Eastern Standard, a broadcast service of Eastern Kentucky University, produced with the support of 1, the Alltech Ideas Conference, and Dynamics Productions. I'm Tom Martin, and in this hour, Lexington is preparing to, or if you're listening to us on Sunday evening, is now hosting thousands of very smart people from all over the world, more than 70 countries, actually. It's Alltech's 35th annual symposium, now known as One. And later in the hour, we have a conversation with Alltech President and CEO Mark Lyons, now a year at the helm that he inherited from his late father, Dr. Pierce Lyons. Full disclosure, Eastern Standard Production is supported by Alltech, and I'll be interviewing for podcasts many of this year's attendees under contract with the company. So we get things going with a conversation with Chris Zook. Chris Zook has spent most of his career as part of the Bain partner team, growing Bain & Company from a startup to a global consulting leader. For over 20 years, he was head of the firm's global strategy practice. In his client work, management roles, speaking and writing, Zook has specialized in how companies find new sources of profitable growth and renew themselves internally to become more adaptive and entrepreneurial. And he is keynote speaker at this year's Alltech One Ideas Conference in Lexington. So if you own a business in need of a fresh infusion of energy, listen up. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Oh, my pleasure.
First, I have to ask you, where in the world do you find the time and energy to do client work, hold management roles, make speaking engagement, write books, articles in the business press, from academic journals to columns in the Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, New York Times, Washington Post, Fortune, Forbes? How do you manage all of this?
Well, to be quite honest, I think there are probably three things as I look back on my very fortunate life. You know, one, above all, I've been surrounded by great people, from my wife to my assistant of 25 years, Brenda Davis, to my co-author, to my Bain colleagues. You know, I'm very humble about how my accomplishments are never mine, but they're the team. Second, I think, you know, living a good, healthy life for quite a number of decades is central. And third, I say no to a lot of things. You know, I fight complexity. Complexity is a silent killer of our lives.
Okay, I'm taking notes here. Let's get to the message that you're going to share with the audience at this year's Alltech One Ideas Conference. The Founder's Mentality is the title of your fifth book, which is a bestseller. And you say that the Founder's Mentality is the best measure of the internal health of a company. Tell us about that.
Sure. I mean, the Founder's Mentality work really came out of the convergence of three amazing facts. One is the speed of change in the world, which changes strategy. It changes business decisions in so many ways. You know, it's amazing to me right now, two-thirds of executives we ask almost say that the main competitor they'll worry about the most in 5 or 6 years is a different company than today. We've never seen that before. You know, Amazon may one day be the main competitor, my company Bain finds, to commercial banks. A second fact is that right now, even though we feel we're in a world of high growth and low unemployment, only 9% of companies in the world over the last 10 years have achieved even a modest level of sustained and profitable growth. Bursts of growth are common, but sustaining growth is rare. And the third most important fact that we found in this work that we did over 5 years and looked at literally thousands of companies is that right now over 80% of the breakdowns in the marketplace, bad product launches, losing market share in key segments, failure to be innovative enough versus competitors, we find now traced back to pre-existing internal conditions that could have been observed and probably could have dealt with in a company. I mean, the good news is that more than ever, companies are confronted with an abundance of cash and abundance of opportunities. And the difficult news is that more often these controllable factors are like the health. So the Founder's Mentality was a search to create a very practical way of looking at the inner health of a company. So I think the Founder's Mentality, which we'll talk about, is the best way to look at this critical element of internal health of a company to be adaptive and fast and attractive to young people that we have found. It has enormous empirical power. If you have these elements that we'll talk about, which are a few, you're about 15 to 20 times more likely to be a top performer than if you don't have them.
Okay, let's touch on those elements. I'll list them, and if you could elaborate on each one, that would be great. The first, frontline obsession.
Sure. I mean, frontline obsession, every founder was the frontline. You know, I mean, Dr. Lyons of Alltech, for example, was, you know, the first person at 3:50 in the morning in the office. He knew the chemistry of enzymes in great detail. He was the first salesperson. He got the first order. And then companies, if they're successful, they grow. And as they grow, they create layers. And as they create layers, leadership can draw farther away from the front line unless they're careful. And research, I think, at MIT has shown that 92% of the major commercializable innovations that a company finds and uses come from working with customers, observations at customers, or frontline employees in the factories or delivery or servicing customers. And when we look at organizations, we find they frequently erode from the frontline first, and that those are the people who often can feel the most alienated as corporate centers grow and as power moves away from the front line, which is a bad thing. So we urge leaders to get out to the front line. There are many measures of employee loyalty that you can use to assess this, but the heroes of a company need to be people at the front line, as in the years of the founder. That is about what frontline is obsession is about. It's measurable, it's observable, and companies that lose their way often erode in the eyes of their frontline employees first.
This next element is certainly intriguing, a sense of insurgency. What does that mean?
You know, most of the great founders that started companies that sustained themselves for a long time first had an idea. They didn't have a lot of resources. They had a group of enthusiastic people around them, and they had an insurgent idea about going to war against the structure or standards of their industry. Think of Nike. Phil Knight in 1973 with the waffle iron, with his co-founder Bill Bowerman in a garage, creating waffle marks on the bottom of shoes to increase performance, and then being able to sign up runners and basketball players because the shoes had better performance. And even today, decades and decades later, Nike is still growing very rapidly, stands for performance, has 2 out of 3 major sports athletes out of the top 10 athletes in almost any sport. And, you know, that to me is about the power of insurgency. Insurgency is about building for the long term. It's about having a mission that everyone in the company understands and finds inspiring. And it is about being very spiky in a few capabilities, not just wanting to be the average bank, the average insurance company, the average anything, but to be very, very special in something. And Nike is an example. Alltech's an example. IKEA's an example. But that's what we mean by insurgency. One final fact. Right now, only 13% of people in America who work for businesses, according to the Gallup poll, say that they are very inspired at their work. Some companies have a much higher number than that. And this is you know, a huge source of energy and innovation in companies.
This third key element that you have identified would seem to me to be an extension of what you just told us, and that is the owner's mindset.
The founder was usually the owner and saw the business as his or her baby. As organizations grow, people can lose that sense of ownership. And it's very important because it translates into willingness to take responsibility versus hiding from a blame, which often happens in large political organizations. It involves a distaste for all the distortions of bureaucracy, of distortions of information and distortions of politics that the founder did not have, but that contaminate businesses. And it involves a obsession with speed to act and to decide and to have a sense of urgency. And when organizations begin to neutralize those phenomena, they become very vulnerable to younger insurgents. And we're seeing this all over the place. So this is the essence of private equity that very often increases the metabolism of businesses. And it's why companies are very well served to organize themselves so that as many people as possible feel like mini founders.
You write about being part of a large company and realizing that things are slowing down and stalling out begins to become a concern. What does it take to re-energize and find new momentum?
You know, very often the stall out happens for internal reasons, not because the business has become obsolete. You know, I can probably illustrate it best with an example that I think most listeners would know. And it's the stall out of Starbucks a number of years ago. You know, Starbucks looked like a high-tech firm, even though it has almost no barriers to entry to the coffee shop business, you would think. And Howard Schultz stayed on the board, but resigned from CEO in 2000 when the company was worth about $25 billion and had 12,000 stores, and it continued on for a while. But then somehow the next wave of management didn't quite have the founder's mentality, and they began focusing on quarterly earnings. The stores were cheaper and had less soul. Baristas were hidden behind aluminum machines to create coffee faster. The stores were cluttered with all kinds of things like videos and crockery to add quarterly earnings. They even put in cheese sandwiches with a cheese the founder would never have done, which when melted contaminated the coffee experience. Howard Schultz came in and he said, oh my God, they lost 85% of their market value in 2 years. Their loyalty numbers were dropping and their same store sales were negative for the first time ever. And some people thought it was external, that maybe it's that new coffee shops are better, or people are going to Joe and the Juice, or people are just tired of Starbucks. But no, it had eroded on the inside. As Howard Schultz said, it was like a sweater unraveling inch by inch, decision by decision. And so all the actions he took to renew Starbucks were internal. He reversed the things I mentioned and many more, went back to the principles of the coffee experience and a sustainable enterprise. And today, Starbucks not only clawed back the 85% of value it lost, but now has twice as many stores 11 years later and is worth almost $100 billion. So that's an example of amazing renewal on the inside.
Well, internal renewal to people, to employees and staff, can be at least perceived as pretty disruptive. The very idea of change can feel threatening. How do you help companies overcome being paralyzed by fears of change and risk and to be flexible when they need to be?
Well, I think a certain amount of it comes with the kind of people that you hire and put in place. You know, you see organizations very often fight the future. A lot of the great stories of stallouts in American or world industry are examples of companies like Kodak or Nokia or General Motors or Blockbuster, which was offered, amazingly, the ability to buy Netflix for $50 million and turned it down because they felt they were in a retail business, not in transferring information. So I think the key is for leaders to surround themselves with open-minded people, to have a board of people who press them on these questions, and sometimes to set up separate organizations that build a microcosm of the future. Just one quick example is a company in China that we've followed called Yongwei, and it's young by, not surprisingly, the Yongwei brothers, to bring the best kind of fresh grocery to Chinese families. But they have red and green stores, and their green stores try every new innovation idea on checkouts, on packaged foods, on different types of foods, and the red stores are the core, and they move ideas from the green stores to the red stores. You know, you have to have a separate creative group always inventing the future and be always open-minded to the 1% possibility. All the companies I mentioned that had stalled out had everything at their disposal and for human reasons lost their way.
Interesting. What kinds of geopolitical trends, events, or dynamics are you keeping an eye on these days?
The main kinds of trends that we think about the most, probably if I just name maybe four or five of them, I mean, there's so many.
Sure.
One are trends in digital technologies that are speeding up the metabolism of companies. One is the superabundance of cash. Interest rates are sustainably as low as they've been since the 1400s, I saw in a doctoral dissertation I found. And this means there's a huge premium on growth because the lower the discount rate, the more the future is valued versus today. That's a critical phenomenon. Companies need to have a viable way to adapt and have a growth story. I think the rise of private equity around that and companies going private and in a way the decline of the public stock market is a very important phenomenon. You know, you look at companies like Dell that went private to restructure or Amazon that insists on long-term investors and keeping its margins down. And finally, I think the increased importance of founders and entrepreneurialism in the world. You know, we're not in America right now, but in the world, we're in a world of growing youth unemployment, and this creates restiveness and political chaos. And yet most large companies in the world are not adding jobs. Jobs are coming from smaller companies that can scale. And so the trends in entrepreneurialism, whether keeping that alive in bigger companies or fostering it in economies, is becoming more and more and more critical. Founders really are the future.
Chris Zook is author of The Founder's Mentality, and he is the keynote speaker at 1:19, the All-Tech Ideas Conference at the Lexington Center in downtown Lexington, Kentucky. Thank you so much, Chris.
My pleasure. Thank you.
A quick break, and I'll be back with Dr. Mark Lyons, President and CEO of All-Tech. We talk about how he's implementing his late father's founder's mentality, as well as his own vision for this Kentucky-based company with offices in more than 120 countries. And later in the hour, some backstory on the Railbird Festival coming to Lexington in August and what makes it different from all that have come before. I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.
Eastern Standard is made possible by 1, the All-Tech Ideas Conference, a global nexus of innovation for the future of food and the farm. Attendees are future thinkers who view technology as transformative opportunity for their business and lives. They share a belief in the boundless power of one idea to change everything. The 35th Annual Conference, 1:19, is May 19th through the 21st, 2019, in Lexington. Learn more at 1.alltech.com.
Major support for Eastern Standard on WEKU is provided by the law firm Hicks & Funson. Kentucky lawyers Josh Hicks, Greg Funson, and Shannon Church provide legal advice and representation in the areas of personal injury, catastrophic accident, and immigration law. Learn more at hfkylawyers.com. Eastern Standard continues with Tom Martin.
We open the hour talking with Chris Zook about his book, The Founder's Mentality. What is it like to actually implement a founder's vision? Joining us now is Mark Lyons, now a year into leading as president and CEO, All-Tech, the business that his late father, Dr. Pierce Lyons, founded on a $10,000 investment and grew from an office in Lexington to a multi-billion dollar agricultural concern with offices all around the world. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And let's talk about this founder's mentality. You grew up living and working to advance your father's vision for All-Tech, and now you're leading the company. How do you grow the company without losing sight of those roots?
I think it's something that's very fundamental, and we were quite lucky, I think, that we came across the book you mentioned, The Founder's Mentality, by Chris Zook, and it really was something that it was timely for us to be thinking about my father and the things that he really believed in, the behaviors that he elicited, and the types of things that he did. And we've spent the last year talking about that within the company and really identifying what made him different and also what made his company different. And so knowing where you come from, having that connection, the fact that he trained and mentored so many people within the organization and had a real belief in some of the things they talk about in the book of a flat structure. He didn't like bureaucracy. He didn't like having a separation between he and his people as he saw it. Therefore, you know, we have a group of us who really understand that and we live and breathe that culture. I think that's extraordinarily important. But we hold something we call back to basics, and we do this every 2-3 times a year. Anybody who joins the company, it could be somebody working on the reception, working on the warehouse floor, or a senior executive and somebody in the lab, everybody's going through the same training. My father ran that training. The week after he passed away, we had a back to basics planned, and there was a big discussion, should we cancel it? And a lot of people said we should, and we decided not to. And I think that that experience to me really brought home something very fundamental. Even though, you know, he'd had a period of illness, 80% of the people in that program of 100 people had never met him before. And after the 3 days of the training, a lady came up and she said, can I take the microphone? Could I say something? And normally we don't do that because he might not give the microphone back. And she said, you know, 3 days ago, we said that 80% of us had never met Dr. Lyons. After 3 days, we feel like we know who he was. And so that really brought home to me that the most fundamental, the most important thing for me leading the company as I go forward is that founder's mentality, is making sure that people understand that culture and they know who he was and my mother, who she is, and that culture that they created within their organization. So that's something that I see as in my role is the most important thing is living that culture and making sure that others are living that as well.
So that provides a grounding to that 80% that otherwise might not have had it.
And I think that you could lose the culture. You could lose the direction of the company. We believe that being a founders-led company, being a family company, is a strategic advantage. It differentiates us. It allows us to make decisions quickly. It allows us to eliminate complexity within our organization the way that maybe a public company or a very large company tends to end up: bureaucratic, slow, complicated, fraught with conflict internally. And we feel that being a family-led company is a differentiating factor. If we don't keep that alive, then we're not utilizing that advantage. And so I see that as a crucial thing. And that's why in so much of what we do, we're keeping my father's legacy alive and continuing to build upon it. At the same time, we're very lucky because he was such a visionary, you know, a scientist, an entrepreneur, and somebody who left us with so many great messages, one of which was he said in Alltech, the only constant is change. And so we know that we need to continue to change, continue to challenge ourselves, and to be thinking about the environment in which we're in and respond to that environment. And so that gives me as a leader and the leadership team, you know, a lot of space, you know, and really feel empowered to continue to develop the company in the ways that we believe we need to.
Well, Mark, your company and your family have experienced the loss of your father and then your sister in 1 year's time. How has that impacted the company?
Well, it's a profound impact, again, because I think we have that closeness. I mentioned when my father passed away, the most natural place for me to go was actually the office. It sounds strange, but my wife and my mother and I went, and we had something to eat, and then I went back to the office, and it just felt like the right place to be with people who really understood what we were going through. The next morning, the Friday morning, we had what my father would typically hold a town hall meeting and talk about when there was something big that happened. And we spent about an hour talking about him and sharing stories and experiences. And so I think that that just showed what that connection was. And I think it really deepened that connection that we had as a group, even though now we're, you know, 6,000 people around the world. You know, he had a profound impact on so many people's lives. And my sister really was no different. She had worked within the company at times, outside the company, had been a good friend to many people, obviously with a different background, being a clinical psychologist. She had helped us in a number of different areas, coaching, putting psychometric testing in place, something that a lot of companies are looking at today. She put that in place several years ago, creating something we call our career development program. And so she did a number of things. And so what I found through both experiences was the closeness and the support and how important that is, you know, having that support of all of our colleagues and that being very important for my mother and for myself. You know, that really helps you get through these very challenging times. You feel the sorrow, the grief, and you have to fully, you know, go through that. At the same time, I think within our culture, we kind of take the view that if you kind of wallow in that self-pity and you feel that, you know, this is something that you've been hard done by, that's not going to make any progress, or certainly as a leader within an organization, it's not going to move the organization forward. So we've really focused on action and what can come from the types of things that we learned from both of them. So we've put that together a little bit through the founder's mentality with my father and my sister. We put together a number of items and areas where, you know, the way she led, the gentle spirit she had, the way she was always trying to help others and really not ask for anything in return. And so in both cases, there are projects that have been started. There's initiatives that people have taken on individually and collectively, I think, to keep their legacy alive.
Let's talk about that action. Are you evolving the company's corporate vision now? I know I've heard the phrase Planet of Plenty, for example.
Yeah, so this is actually a phrase I think I used first in a talk several years ago, and then my father actually took it on and had it as a wrap-up slide in one of his presentations. And it was something that we just kind of felt maybe speaks more to the world that we see as the future. We see a world of abundance, a world of infinite ideas that are going to help us to create the future that we desire, not one of finite resources and fraught with conflict. So you know, there's somewhat of an aspiration there, but it's also a vision that we believe that we can play a role in creating. And so we talk about it working together with our customers, working together with various different parts of the industry, different parts of our communities that we operate in now in over 120 countries. And the concept is essentially that if we come together and we can collaborate and we can create these new innovations, I took something from my father's desk and it's on my desk today, it's amazing what you can achieve when nobody cares who gets the credit. I think that's a big message within this. But we feel that the technologies that are coming out, that are developing, that already exist are going to help us to create that planet of plenty. And that's one of the big announcements that we'll have. What does that mean? What is that concept this year at our 119 conference?
Connecting people to agriculture. I know that's an initiative of Alltech and also of the Alltech One conference as well. How do you go about that?
So one of the most important principles for Alltech, we call the ACE principle, the animal, the consumer, and the environment, and the balance of these three things being so important. The unique part of this is that we've been speaking about this since 1985. So today, this is an idea, this is a concept people are talking about, farm to table, they're wanting transparency, and they're wanting to understand where their food comes from, and all those things are very important. But it's been a message that we've been pushing the industry to think about for a long time. The consumer ultimately is our customer, and we need to understand their interests, that we need to respect their demands and their questions. And therefore, we feel that the more we can do to connect with them, to tell the great stories of agriculture and agricultural production and how hard people work to produce the food that's put on our tables, I think is a story worth telling and worth listening to. And so what we do is we use things like the One Conference to bring together a lot of different ideas, a lot of disparate opinions and perspectives and backgrounds. And so I think within that, when you have a group of really progressive, interested and interesting and intelligent people in one place, you can come up with some of these innovations that can help us to work towards that planet of plenty.
Are you expanding into human health in any way?
So Alltech has had a lot of curiosity. That's one of the most important values within the company. And we've often thought of different areas that our technologies, our ideas could impact human health. We know that a lot of what we do is already impacting human health. So the approach we have to production of meat, milk, and eggs, of crops, of fruit, is a natural approach. And we know that in many ways we're able to enrich those foods and have better nutritional content in some of those foods and less impact on some negative aspects of food production in certain cases. And so we already have that, but we also are looking at other areas. We've worked for many years with the Sanders Brown Center here in Lexington in terms of aging, in terms of slowing aging and other types of areas like that. But we're going to be announcing a few other initiatives as well, partnering with some health-focused companies, hospitals, to think about ways that we as a community can be more healthy, ways that we can use the types of nutraceuticals or other types of products that Alltech has capabilities in to enhance the vitality of our lives.
You've been in discussions with the city of Lexington, with the state, and with others in the area about cultivating Lexington as a hub of agricultural technology. Where does all that stand now?
So that's something that we've continued actually last year. At the One Conference, we held an event, a lunch, where we talked about this and discussed the idea. We've been progressing those discussions both at a state level, at the agricultural secretary level, and of course here more locally with the city of Lexington, with the University of Kentucky. And what we're doing right now, what we're going to be asking for during the One Conference and after, is really to take a temperature of the region. What is the interest in this area? Who is involved in ag tech? What are the entrepreneurs in our community like? And what is the right approach to take to make sure that we harness the energy of the entrepreneurial spirit here and make sure that we direct that in the right way? One of the things that Kentucky has, which is a major advantage, is the diversity and the number of people involved in agriculture. And so we don't have a lot of major agricultural companies based here, but what we do have is that diversity. And so I think that's an area where ag tech can really play a role, because we can try things out, we can learn, we can directly connect that programmer to that producer. And that's something that we feel is very important. Typically in these technology spaces, You have somebody coming in with technology wanting to disrupt something. And in this case, in agriculture, I don't think that's the right approach. I think the right approach is actually partnership and collaboration. And we think that Kentucky has a unique opportunity there. So what we're going to do is we're committing to this area. We're now in the third year of our Pierce Lyons Accelerator. And so it's all about creating impactful technologies, creating that connection, and being able to communicate these complex ways in a simple manner. So that's, of course, something very connected to the Pierce Lyons legacy. And we'll have 9 of those companies pitching on our stage on Monday afternoon in the One Conference. But I think what's more important within that is to say that's being held in Ireland. What are we going to do here in Kentucky? And how do we broaden this program to make sure that next year that becomes part of the program? But we're going to do that again in the appropriate way. We're reaching out to people. We're understanding what the scenario is and what the environment is in terms of ag tech and entrepreneurialism. And we'll appropriately use our resources. But it's something that we're very committed to and we'll continue to move forward.
Your brand, Alltech, is very well known in Kentucky, especially for distilling and around that whole space. But am I right? I'm under the impression that you are firmly aligned over the long run with sustainability in a very broad sense. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah. So, you know, I think growing up, you know, that was something that was really important to us, perhaps the connection to Ireland and coming from a green island, as it were, and a food producing island, a country that produces, you know, far more food and always has than it needs and has been an exporting country. You know, that green element and the green production is very critical. As I've traveled around the world and now lived in a number of different countries, you see the impact that humans have on our environment. And food production to me is actually one of the least impactful areas. It's one that's often gets the finger pointed to it, but really it's everything else that we're doing today. Our energy consumption, the way we want to live, the habits we have. And I think that, you know, as a company where we know our technologies already have a big impact in reducing environmental impact, we also want to think about our own behaviors. And we want to promote that as something that these are the changes that we're taking within our business and help others to do the same. And so we're creating that as part of our overall idea of a planet of plenty. It's really around the sustainability initiatives. It's around the foundation and the types of things that we're doing to give back to our communities and indeed the overall impact on human health. These are kind of 3 of the prongs of our Planet of Plenty strategy. And so that the sustainability aspect is fundamental to what we're doing.
Okay. We have just a little bit over a minute left. And the 2019 Alltech One Ideas Conference is coming up. If you're listening to our Sunday evening rebroadcast, it just got underway today. And I know that you have some announcements ahead. Without giving away too much, can you offer some hints of what's to come?
Yeah, so the conference this year, you know, we've got some really great speakers, but I think what's going to be exciting is kind of showing our report card to a certain degree. You know, 1 year since losing our founder, what have we done? And I think we've been able to progress a lot of different initiatives. We're talking about this ag tech area. We're talking about also some partnerships that we're creating in the local community and things that can be very impactful, we believe, not just in the long term, but in the short term, and some different ways of looking at food production. So those are going to be some of the things that we'll be announcing on the Monday and rolling through into the Tuesday as well. So it's going to be a tremendous session, very exciting conference, really something unique, probably the most international event that takes place in Kentucky this year.
Let's just touch on that for just a second. About how many countries represented, do you think?
So this year, we expect to have over 70 countries represented. We're looking to eclipse the number of 3,500 people total in attendance we had last year, and we look to be on target for that. And so as you're driving through downtown Lexington, you will see people from a lot of different places. And this year, we had the opportunity to partner with Keeneland and go out there. We've always gone out to the horse park. So that's going to be another nice element, but also back out to Alltech and bringing that into the program as well this year. We're expanding our head office and adding another 75,000 square feet of office space. And so we want to showcase that as well.
Alltech President and CEO, Dr. Mark Lyons, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up after the break, Amanda Kelly from the Southeast Kentucky Economic Development Corporation on Be Boss Online, help for small businesses intimidated by that whole social media thing. And why the new Railbird Festival coming to Keeneland this summer is unlike anything Lexington has ever hosted. I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.
Eastern Standard is made possible by One, the All-Tech Ideas Conference. One is an incubator of innovation, a forum for future thinkers, and a platform for propelling forward the promise of a planet of plenty. Attendees view technology as a transformative opportunity for their businesses and lives in order to make a difference in the world. Learn more about 119 in Lexington, May 19th through 21st, 2019, at one.alltech.com.
Major support for Eastern Standard on WEKU is provided by the law firm Hicks & Funson. Kentucky lawyers Josh Hicks, Greg Funson, and Shannon Church provide legal advice and representation in the areas of personal injury, catastrophic accident, and immigration law. Learn more at hfkylawyers.com. And now back to Eastern Standard with Tom Martin.
Amanda Kelly is Small Business Training Director at the Southeast Kentucky Economic Development Corporation in Somerset. Amanda, along with her colleague Kyle Smith, developed BeBoss Online. It's a program that teaches online marketing strategy and how to own your internet presence. Thanks for joining us, Amanda.
Thanks for having me, Tom. I really appreciate it.
So do I have that description right?
It's perfect, yes.
Tell us more about BeBoss Online.
So BeBoss Online is a curriculum that we developed to help small business owners in Southeast Kentucky do a better job with their digital presence. So we help them with their Google, getting their Google business listing set up properly, with making sure their map dot is in exactly the right spot, getting their Facebook ads, Google ads, building a website. We also go over email marketing, Google Analytics, and customer service online.
Those are things that I think we all kind of freelance with Google and all this stuff. I bet you wade into a lot of messes out there.
Absolutely. A lot of things are not set up properly. And if they're not set up properly, then customers can't find you. They get frustrated trying to get in contact with you. And ultimately, you lose that customer. So we try really hard to make sure the businesses are set up properly with the right information to make it as easy as possible for their customers to find them.
You mentioned businesses in Southeast Kentucky, but tell us more about your target clients.
So we target we work in the 45 counties in Southeast Kentucky with SCED. But in addition to that, we also market this curriculum to other organizations like SCED around the country. So we've sold this curriculum. We've got a client in San Diego who's purchased it, a client in Maine. We've got about six of them out there around the country so far, and they're starting to use this curriculum with their clients.
So tell us about a training session. What goes on?
So we meet four times over the course of 4 weeks for 3 hours at a time. And we have one class per week, and that allows the students, the small business owners, to really break down what we've talked about and understand it before we get into a new session. We sit in front of computers. Every business is working on their business during class. They can work on their Facebook page. They can work on their Google business listing. Both Kyle and I are Google Trusted Verifiers. So not only can we set up the Google page, but we can also verify it on site. So that allows us to really help the business owners accomplish something right away.
Can the curriculum be customized?
It can be. We've got about 20 different modules that we utilize, and depending on the class and what the class needs, we will change the curriculum a little bit to make sure that it meets their needs as best as possible.
So social media, and that's what we're talking about here, working in as a set of tools, it can work for you, it can work against you. What tips do you offer clients in that regard?
When we're teaching these classes, one of the questions I ask is why they're not doing more on social media. And the biggest answer I get is because they're afraid of negative reviews. Mm-hmm. What small business owners don't understand is that negative reviews aren't the problem. It's their response to negative reviews that causes them trouble. So we teach them how to properly respond to a negative review, how to handle it, and how to keep going forward. But when it comes down to it, customers are okay seeing a negative review if you've taken care of it.
So it really pays to grow a thick skin and be diplomatic in the way that you deal with it?
It does. It does. And it's really hard for people to understand that. When you build a business, you've built it from scratch, and you're really emotionally attached to it. So it's hard to step back and say, this isn't personal. This is business. But that's what we try to teach.
And have you seen some examples of your handiwork, some businesses out there that have gotten it and they know how to do it now?
Absolutely. We worked in the Red River Gorge back about a year ago and had a client go through the class, and it's a campground. And they have increased revenue 250%.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
It made a big difference.
Okay. How can somebody who just heard that and is interested in BeBoss Online, how can they learn more about it? How can they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. So you can check out the Southeast Kentucky Economic Development Corporation's Facebook page. We have events on there. My email address is akelly@centertech.com. Feel free to email me. We've got a class coming up in Corbin starting in May, and then we'll be in Whitesburg and Jackson in the fall.
Amanda Kelly is Small Business Training Director at the Southeast Kentucky Economic Development Corporation in Somerset. Thank you so much, Amanda.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it.
If you've been to the races at Keeneland, you probably know what a railbird is, a spectator who takes up position on the railing between track and stands. But come August, the term takes on new meaning. Art Checkett from our arts and culture partner Undermain got the backstory from Railbird Festival organizer David Helmers.
Let's get right into it. There's an exciting new music festival happening this summer, Railbird, and why don't you give us the brief on what Railbird is and what's going to be happening and when it is?
Sure. Railbird is a brand new music festival coming to Lexington, Kentucky. It's going to be held on the grounds at Keeneland August 10th and 11th, Saturday and Sunday, this summer, 2019. We're very excited about it.
This is a major music festival. We've had other music festivals, sort of ground up music festivals. You've been involved in some of that in the past.
That's right. I helped bring Moon Tower to Lexington, and that was very much a grassroots effort. We did that locally. We're proud of it, but you're right. This is a different level.
What kinds of acts are we going to see? What kind of performers? Who's going to be here?
We've got a fantastic lineup. We've got our headliners include the Raconteurs, Jack White's super group, Grammy winner Brandi Carlile. On Sunday, we have Hozier, who just debuted a new album at number one on the Billboard 300 chart, and local native son Tyler Childers. And that's kind of the top of the lineup, but we've got a really powerful middle of the lineup all the way down to some great local acts that are going to be sharing stages with some of these other artists.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to a couple of the middle tier folks like Gary Clark Jr., who is really one of the great guitar players, vocalists around. Lucinda Williams is going to be here too.
Absolutely. We've got Lucinda and some other artists that I would consider classics. I mean, Lucinda Williams, Robert Earl Keen, Mavis Staples, who's been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now for 20 years. Blues, rock and roll, bluegrass, folk, really something for everybody.
So it's across the board as far as genres go.
I feel like that. I mean, there may be a couple genres here, heavy metal and hip hop, that aren't represented this year. But overall, I think we've got something for everybody.
Now, how did this come about to be on the grounds of Keeneland? Keeneland's never done anything like this before. I mean, they've had some big events there, obviously the racing and other kinds of events. They've had the Lexville do their two shows on summer evenings, but they've never had a major music festival there.
This is new territory for Keeneland, and I couldn't be happier about how that came about. Honestly, I went and met with some executives at Keeneland, their COO, and asked if they'd be willing to do that. I think they have been asked in the past. I don't think they were quite ready for it, but our timing was good, and they have been a fantastic partner in this whole endeavor. Their willingness to open the hallowed grounds of Keeneland for something new has really enabled us to make this happen and attract production partners and I think ultimately talent that are going to make this a fantastic event.
And how will the grounds of Keeneland be used for this? How will the setup work out there?
Well, folks are probably familiar with the Hill at Keeneland, where they do a lot of tailgating during the race meet. We'll be utilizing that space. We'll also be utilizing what they call the Meadow. The Meadow is where Picnic with the Pops, where the Philharmonic performs. And I think a lot of people have been to events at Keeneland at the Keene Barn and Entertainment Center. So we'll have that facility, the paved area behind it, and both of those large fields that we just described, the Hill and the Meadow. It's a large footprint, and we've got a lot of room out there to spread out We'll have three stages. So that means people won't be crowded, but they can move around, and we're really taking advantage of all the great property that they have out at Keeneland.
So are the stages going to all be going at the same time, or are you going to alternate?
The main two stages will alternate. We call that AB. So we'll go back and forth so you can catch most of the acts and not have to make those hard choices. The third stage, which is being curated by the Burl, great music club here in Lexington, that will overlap with some of the other artists. So occasionally you'll have to make a choice about what you're going to see, but we think we've got good choices.
Will there be other things to do at Keeneland during the festival besides listen to the music?
Absolutely. We've got all kinds of great things. And if you think about Kentucky, you think about a few things, bourbon being one of them. And we're going to have a big bourbon activation in the Keene Barn called the Rick House, where we'll have offerings of single barrel bourbons from a number of distilleries, stuff that you haven't had before. We're going to have great food. There are culinary experiences curated by some of our well-known local chefs in town, including Cole from Cole's and Weta Michael and Dan Wu, folks that we all know and we're glad to have here. So you've got bourbon, you've got food. Equine is a major part of Lexington, and we are the horse capital of the world. So there's going to be some horse experiences there. Folks can come out early in the morning on Saturday and Sunday, watch the workouts at Keeneland, actually get an add-on ticket, leave Keeneland and go on a horse farm tour, and then come back, have a brunch, champagne toast, and be ready for the gates to open about midday. So we've got bourbon, we've got food, we've got horses, and horse racing is kind of the epicenter of what goes on at Keeneland. We'll have simulcast wagering of races at Saratoga and Del Mar, so people can actually bet on the ponies while they're at the music festival. And that, as far as I know, for music festivals, that's a brand new experience.
You're a co-producer of this festival. How did this come about? Who are your major partners in this?
So it came about with an idea that Lexington was ready to host a major music festival, that we have a lot here to offer, and we wanted to invite the world to come and explore that and see some great music here in Lexington. As someone who's a big fan of music and live music and attending festivals, it's great to go to New Orleans, or it's great to go to Charleston or other cities and attend a music festival. But it also, I thought it was high time we had one right here so I could go to the festival and come home and sleep in my own bed. So I met with some folks here in the city, shared my idea, got a lot of great local support, and then set out kind of recruiting the best of the best as a potential production partner. And Visit Lex, our Convention Visitor Bureau, was very supportive of that effort. Keeneland has been a champ from the beginning. Ultimately, we networked to and recruited AC Entertainment to come here and be our partner in producing this event.
Well, tell our listeners about AC Entertainment.
AC is kind of the creme de la creme of festival production. It's a company that was founded by Ashley Capps. They produce over 1,000 shows a year, probably most well-known for having founded Bonnaroo, which was 18 years ago. And at the time, that was just revolutionary in the festival world. Ashley said, I'm going to have a festival in Manchester, Tennessee, and invite some of the biggest talent, you know, in the world to come here. I think people thought maybe he was crazy. It's been a huge success, and we're very lucky to have them on board. They're very well qualified. They have great experience. They book some iconic venues like the Orange Peel in Asheville and the Bijou in Knoxville and a lot of shows at the Ryman Theater in Nashville. They have a great team, a very experienced team, and they're going to help us put on a great festival here in Lexington.
Yeah, they're a really innovative festival company. I mean, one of the great festivals that they put on is Big Ears down in Knoxville, which is a really innovative kind of avant-garde music festival. That's fantastic.
For sure. That's their hometown festival. I think it's Ashley Capp's baby. And they really do things that nobody else is doing in the festival world. And it's something they're very proud of, and they should be.
What will be the hours? This isn't a camping opportunity for people. This is a day attendance festival.
It is. It's day and evening. Gates will open, I would guess, around 11 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday. Music will start shortly thereafter and will last until 10:30 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. There are some other events. There's a Friday kickoff dinner. There's a Friday bourbon tasting. There are brunches at Keeneland both Saturday and Sunday. The horse farm tours that we mentioned. So we're trying to kind of give people a lot of opportunities to do stuff on Keeneland's campus and then also in the surrounding area at Keeneland.
And what kind of ticket opportunities are there? Can people buy tickets now online? Are they out there for people to buy? Are there different ways you can get ticketed for these events?
Yes, tickets are available. You get them through the website, which is www.railbirdfest.com. And those tickets are on sale now. We've had a tremendous response, and people are buying tickets. We sold weekend passes, three different tiers, a general admission ticket, a VIP ticket, and then what we call a superfecta ticket, which is kind of a super VIP package. And starting soon, we're going to offer single day tickets. Initially, we were just selling weekend tickets. We had a lot of people who were saying, "Boy, I can't come both days. We hope you'd offer a single day ticket." And like most festivals, once tickets have been on sale for a little while, we've switched to allow single day tickets, and that's coming soon.
What are you guys projecting as a possible attendance at this festival?
We anticipate this year having between 15 and 20,000 people attend a day. So like we were talking about earlier, this is a festival like we haven't had in Lexington before. It's a pretty major event, but we've got enough going on, enough property out there. It's not going to be a crowded event, but a well-attended event and hopefully a whole lot of fun.
Are there any thoughts about the future of the festival after this year?
Definitely, we plan to continue the festival. 2019, you know, is the first year. We couldn't be happier with the lineup that we have for an inaugural event. But hopefully, this is something that we'll continue to do every year, and it'll grow into an institution. We've gotten a lot of national media about this festival because I think it's unique in a lot of ways. Pitchfork listed Railbird as one of the top 20 festivals for the summer of 2019, and they included us with some pretty impressive company. The New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, which most people consider
Jazz
the granddaddy.
Fest.
Yeah, also we all call it Jazz Fest, but it's kind of the granddaddy of music festivals. It's celebrating its 50th year this year. And, you know, we'll see. Hopefully Railbird, it becomes an institution, kind of a red letter day on our calendar that we know in August that's something that's happening here for a long time to come.
Well, David Helmers, thanks so much for all the work you've done to bring Railbird to Lexington, and thanks for coming on our show. And remember, folks, Railbird Festival happens this summer at the grounds of Keeneland, August 10th and 11th, 2019. You can buy tickets online, railbirdfest.com. And thanks again, and good luck with the festival.
Thanks so much for having me. I can't wait to see you in August. It's going to be a great time.
That wraps up this week's edition. Eastern Standard is a broadcast service of Eastern Kentucky University, produced in the Lexington studios of Dynamics Productions with the support of 1. The All-Tech Ideas Conference, a global nexus of innovation for the future of food and the farm. Our executive producer is Mike Savage. Neil Kesterson is our producing engineer and audio editor. We're online at esweku.com, on the WEKU mobile app available for Apple and Android devices, and as a podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. We do like to hear from you. You can email us at es@eku.edu. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.